This is Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, is there a life after death? Tonight's guest, the Right Reverend James A. Pike, former bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of California. Night Call is your program. Share your opinions and ideas with the rest of the country. Speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Night Call in New York City from anywhere in North America. Here are Night Call's special phone numbers. From the East and Midwest, call collect at area code 212-749-3311. From the West at 212-749-4300. And from the New York area at 866-5010. Now from New York City, Night Call's host, Del Shields.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Tonight we welcome WFBM in Indianapolis, Indiana, to the Night Call Network. Is there a life after death, and is it possible to communicate with the dead? If we, the living, can talk to those on the other side, what does it do to our accepted concepts of life and death and its relationship to one another? Bishop James A. Pike, one of America's best-known clergymen and author of the book, The Other Side, not only does he maintain that this is possible, but claims that he has communicated with his son, who committed suicide. The news has caused great controversy and turmoil. Some accuse Bishop Pike of causing further complications in the present-day disintegration of religion and in search for truth in the field of the abstract. Bishop Pike is standing by in Santa Barbara, California, where he is a member of the Center for the Study of Democratic Institutions. He will answer your questions about his unique exploration of psychic phenomena and what all these experiences may mean to the living. Bishop Pike, good evening, sir. Bishop Pike? Good evening, Bishop Pike. Bishop Pike, I'm sorry, yes, we had a little bit of a technical problem there.
Thank you. All right, we're all together now?
We are together now.
Fine.
Thank you so much for being with us, sir.
Glad to be with you.
Bishop, let's begin our conversation tonight by asking first, can we who are alive talk to those on the other side?
It is clear to me that we who are alive can be in touch with the other side. The most plausible theory as to what is happening, the kinds of experiences I have had and which are described in the book The Other Side, recently published by Doubleday, is that persons on the other side, loved ones and others, are the source of the communications from the other direction with whom we are in dialogue through mediums. There is an alternate theory, however, discussed at length in the book, and it would be pretty complicated to explain, but one purpose of my title, The Other Side, is to indicate the other side of credulity, that is, of overbelief, the other side of an overly simple and perhaps superstitious view. In other words, there may be the collective unconscious mind that C. G. Jung, the late Zurich psychiatrist, talked about, and all that has ever happened, all the memory traces are there, and the medium is drawing on that. That is hard enough to believe anyway. That isn't easy either. But something really is coming through beyond just what the medium might know, what might be drawn out of one's mind through extrasensory perception or out of the depths of one's memory. Facts that one did not know and which can be verified and checked later do in fact come through. And the question is, then what does that mean? By faith, I believe the most plausible answer is it is communication with persons who have passed on and are on their way on the other side.
Well, Bishop Pike, can we reach the dead, or do the dead have to seek to reach us?
This I don't know. I had the experience myself of, it seems, my son seeking to reach me. I didn't know anything about this field. I never had any experience in it. I might add, no interest in it. The initiative came from the other side. Now, persons have sought from this side and have reported that they have somehow established contact. I seem to have later on, but the beginning of it all was the other direction.
In a letter to the editor in answer or to in response to part one of reproduction of part of your book in Look magazine, I'd like to just take a quote from one of our from one of the readers.
Yes.
And the reader says, I put aside the magazine and wept bitterly for the tragic boy whose father violated the most blessed and fragile of human relationships and who obviously respects him no more in death than he did in life. What is your response to that?
Well, first of all, the author of this letter had no way of being judgmental on how much respect I had or lack of respect I had for my son while he was alive. I took my son to Cambridge with me on sabbatical, and he was enrolled there in Cambridge at a junior college, and I felt we had a very respectful, meaningful, deep relationship. And this is a case of persons being judgmental about others, which I always try to avoid in my own life. Second, as far as being not respecting Jim by helping other young people and parents relate to young people, particularly with problems, psychedelic drugs, and temptation to suicide, as has been reflected by hundreds and hundreds of letters from parents who've been helped and young people, including some young people who've gone off drugs because simply they've read this, I feel the greatest ongoing work that perhaps my son could do in this terrain is through the mediums, he said at least, when some were in trance, that is, when the medium didn't know what was going on, that this should be let out. That, now, that doesn't mean it should. Those on the other side are not oracles, and it's not the voice of God, and it's just good advice like you might give me or I might give you, and you have to take it as such. Nevertheless, all in all, after careful weighing and after leaving a distance and after reading scientific works and consulting psychiatrists and psychologists on the data, I did come out with it, and I think it was the thing to do. I think it was meant in memory of my son, as indeed the dedication of the book indicates.
Does the confusion about life after death stem from the fact that we as living people are never prepared to face death?
That's an interesting question. I'm not sure that I am. By that I mean, I was, before this happened, and I still am, pretty much a one-world-at-a-time fellow. I'm coping now, and I'll cope with whatever comes up next. I'm here, and if there is eternal life, and I believe there is, I'm as much in eternal life now as I'll ever be. This segment of it is as important as any other. And I feel the more open I become, the less hung up, the more loving, the more responsive, the more flexible, traveling light, as it were, the less idolatrous. Certainly when I die, I'll be that far along in a process that may take a long, long time on the other side. So I wouldn't say myself that I'm preparing for death. I think I'm hopefully preparing for life and hoping to live more fully now.
Bishop Pike, what is the nature of life after death?
Well, again, I don't know, but of the two theories, which are both current within my own tradition and certain others, one is sleep until the second coming of Jesus, then a trumpet blows and everybody wakes up, and some are sent to heaven for good and some to hell for good. And another theory, which is that those who pass on are still very much alive and conscious and can grow and have freedom to change and continue to confront things either positively or negatively. They can shrivel too, just as we can here. Both of those theories are in our Anglican tradition, and we have both types of prayer side by side in the prayer book. The latter type were put in 1928, such as we pray that they may grow from strength to strength in the life of perfect service, so they may enter more and more into, and so forth. Now, the data from the psychic field, not only my own experience set forth carefully at length from the material that was witnessed or on tape recordings in my own case, plus much other data put in books scientifically analyzed, would suggest that that latter way is the way it is. If persons do survive, they survive as persons, not as objects, not as things. In other words, they have freedom. They can move. They can change. They can gain an understanding, and gain an a sense of joy and purposefulness with other people. They seem to be in relation to other people. I guess that's what in the creed we call a communion of saints. That seems to be the nature of it.
This is Night Call in New York, and our conversation tonight, Is There a Life After Death? And our guest calling in from Santa Barbara, California, is the Right Reverend James A. Pike, former Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of California. And just before we go to our Night Call, listeners, a reminder to you of our telephone numbers. Remember, when you call in, the sooner you call in, the sooner you will be able to exchange conversation with us. If you're calling from the East or the Midwest, it's area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. If you're calling from the West Coast, it's area code 212-749-4300. I should say if you're calling from the West, not the West Coast, area code 212-749-4300. And locally here in New York, you may call us at 866-5010. That's 866-5010. We'll take our first call tonight from Oxford, Ohio. Mr. Hackney is here in Night Call over WMUB-FM. Mr. Hackney?
Yes.
Good evening, sir.
Bishop Pike, if I might, I noticed in reading your articles or excerpts from your book in Look Magazine that there was quite a bit of, you might say, skepticism on your part in the at first in trying to contact your son. Tell me, is there some way that you found of finding a true clairvoyant or a true medium, and how did you know when you had finally contacted your son in actuality?
I was very fortunate, sir, in that not having even expected such a thing, when the external phenomena were occurring in the apartment at Cambridge, described in part in Look Magazine and those issues, and fuller length in the book, The Other Side, and with two persons present, neither of whom were believers in life after death, to the number of 50 or 55 within 10 days, I sought professional help. I called up an officer, a vice president, I believe, vice chairman of the Church's Fellowship for Psychical and Spiritual Studies, which has a dozen or so leading bishops on its board of sponsors, Canon Pierce Higgins, and he recommended that I see and made an appointment with Mrs. Ina Twigg in London, whom I had never heard of because I didn't know the field. But it turns out she's a very distinguished medium, a very lovely person, and when things came through, I was impressed, particularly where it did not seem to be a lot of platitudes meant to make me feel comfortable. In fact, that first session, my son seemed quite unhappy, quite disturbed of what he'd done, quite concerned about what we were thinking about him. And at that time, he said that he wanted out, but he found there was no out, and he wished he'd remained and worked things out in more familiar surroundings. In addition, he gave out particular facts and names and places which, these came through at least, which made me feel that this was genuine and not simply straight ESP from me or simply something the medium might be saying by way of comforting words in a pastoral sense. So that's why I felt then that this was the real thing. And afterwards, there have been other sessions, about a dozen or 15, not many in 3 years, when I was traveling or going through London or when I was east and could see Mr. Arthur Ford or so forth. And that's the way one would test it, I suppose, if new things come in that are not in one's own mind. Otherwise, you might attribute it to extrasensory perception or ESP.
Well, now, one other question that I did have, when you were beginning the conversations, you might say, with your son and with your other friend, I can't recall the name offhand, did you come under quite a bit of attack personally by the clergy, or were they willing to accept that you were able to communicate with the dead?
I never talked about it to the clergy, except in a case of two who came to me in desperation for counsel, each of them not knowing each other, but each of them over a period of time wanting to commit suicide. I shared with them and told them that comment I've quoted already earlier about there being no way out and working things out in more familiar surroundings, and it made such an impression that they held up, and I was able to get them psychiatric help, and they're both doing very well today. I keep in touch with them. I told no one until a pro year and a quarter ago on the Canadian television, CTV network, with the Reverend Arthur Ford, Disciples of Christ minister, noted medium, who went into trance on the program, and most remarkable things came through. And this then got out 2 weeks later through the New York Times and other papers. At that time, then clergy could react, and other people too. Now, since the Look magazine articles, and now since the book is out, but a few more clergy reactions have come out. It's very interesting that most mail is favorable, but of the negative mail, the clergy are less believing about this than scientists, psychologists, psychiatrists.
Well, now, from your indications that you've noted, out of curiosity more than anything else, have you gathered that anyone on the other side, or anyone in the land of the dead, or whatever you wish to call it, can these people communicate with the living if there is a desire on both help, or do you feel, or on both parts, excuse me, or do you feel that the deep religious beliefs is something that has a great deal to do with this ability to communicate?
Sir, that's a very important point, and I don't recall that having been raised in discussions of this type before. I would like to make a comment about it. Dr. Ian Stevenson, professor of neurology and psychiatry at the University of Virginia Medical College in Charlottesville, who has done quite a bit of study in this field and under a foundation grant did a big book called 20 Cases Suggestive of Reincarnation, a topic that I've not studied myself very much, but he is very scientific about it all, has reached the conclusion that the religious beliefs that persons have at the time of death have something to do with their expectancy, and therefore it takes some time for them to adjust to the scene being any different from what they expected,
yes,
including the possibility of communication. Now, this has seemed to reflect itself. Part of the task of those who've gone on beyond, who seems finally to have come into more light and strength, like it would appear my son has, the line going up the graph rather consistently, even though the mediumship is random, that is, three different mediums over a 6,000-mile range, which thus avoids the impression that maybe a medium is just feeding you out a little bit of line each time to make you feel gradually better or something.
Yes.
It would seem that as one gets further along, part of their task is to teach others to know that they can communicate. Some have to have it explained to them that they are really dead. They're not willing to accept that fact for a while, but others find a scene like they didn't expect, such as they expected purgatory, for example, with punishments, and the possibility of growth and change may not have occurred to them, and others didn't expect to be there at all, so forth. Well, in any case, the teaching of persons that they really can communicate seems to enter the scene. I've had some experience of that in some of the sessions where a medium was in trance and several persons were involved, were coming through, it would seem, where one, perhaps my son, was urging someone else to go ahead and try, because a person present needed to hear from that person. In one case, very much so. Now, these are all very tentative conclusions, I state, from very limited experience and even from reading quite a bit of scholarly analysis. This is simply the best, shall we say, inference I can draw.
Mr. Hackney, thank you for calling, sir.
Fine, thank you for the answer and the time.
Thank you, sir. This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to our guest, Bishop Pike, following station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest, Bishop James A. Pike, after station identification. Night Call welcomes your comments about this nationwide listener call-in program. Your opinions and reactions are of value to the producers of Night Call in their continuing attempt to initiate and stimulate dialogue between the black man in the street and his white counterpart. Please address your comments to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. The producers of Night Call attempt to balance the points of view presented on this series about controversial issues. In keeping with this traditional concern for free expression on controversial matters, Night Call invites requests for equal time from responsible representatives on opposing points of view if it's thought they have not been adequately represented on the air. Such requests should be addressed to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself collect from anywhere in North America to guest Bishop James A. Pike about Is There a Life After Death? Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-4300. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And during the station identification break, we were having a bit of a problem with Bishop Pike's line, but he's back with us once again.
Hello.
All right, Bishop. Thank you, sir. You're calling all the way, or I should say you're calling all the way in from Santa Barbara, and with the weather being so bad in New York, we may be having a bit of a problem, so we appreciate your patience.
Right.
Well, from Santa Barbara to New York and now to San Diego, California, Mr. Scott is hearing Night Call over KOGO-FM. Mr. Scott?
Good evening.
Good evening, sir. Your question.
I've been very interested in your experiences as I read them in the Look magazine condensations.
Yes.
And I've been somewhat of a skeptic myself in the past, and I think I will put on that hat once again, and I will... I'd like to
govern the
hypothetical...
keep on, I think, as one looks at data like this, checking everything out and asking all the questions.
Well, I'd like to pose a hypothetical question to you then. Are not your experiences possibly, through the medium, a medium interpreting your own wishes and himself interpreting them as though they were someone speaking to you from beyond?
I think that's quite possible. Some things have come through that sound like that. However, if one realizes that if there be personal survival, that the person surviving, say my son, is not God, is not an oracle, then what he might say, if indeed it is he, or what is brought to you through the medium, even if it's from yourself, is not to be taken any more seriously than the comment of any other living person. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
For example, there have been two or three occasions when my son seemed to be saying, don't take the blame for this on yourself, or similar words. Well, the most one can say about that is, well, that's nice of him, but that doesn't tell you anything about whether you should take the blame or how much you should take. Of course, I blame myself for many shortcomings over the years that, oh, I'm sure had some bearing on what happened. And he can't discharge that from me. I know how I do that. That's another subject. It's grace, we call it, and God handles those things. But on the other hand, when things have come through which are not just what one would hear, want to hear, as I mentioned in the first couple of sessions when Jim was not happy at all, was working his way through and so forth, this isn't exactly what one would project into the medium as what one wants to hear. And there have been a number of things all through that were not what one expects. Now, how much of that is, as I say, out of the medium, how much is out of yourself, how much is from beyond, these things are hard to know. However, the paid dirt, by that I mean that which seems to be data, verified data, or verifiable data, that points to something genuinely coming from the other side, whether it's the collective unconscious mind, kind of the memory bank, a collective memory bank, or out of a living person, which seems the more plausible of the two, are things which one, facts, persons, names, specifics, which one did not know and had to verify later. Mm-hmm. And if they panned out, well then, and it's something the medium cannot have investigated, we'll say.
Yeah.
Now, not everything is that, I assure you. There's a lot that could come out of straight extrasensory perception right out of your own mind.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a fascinating subject. I really can't say how I feel about it myself.
Well, I would suggest, if you're interested, there's a very careful bibliography at the end of the book, The Other Side, a classified one with the names of the authors with their degrees and their professorships and very competent people honored in their own professions. And some of those books are excellent in terms of analysis of data of this sort, and many, many examples cited.
Well, I think the thing that qualifies it the most for me is the way you concluded at least what was in the article in Look, with saying if someone had to ask you whether or not you believed it, you'd have to say yes, in fact, you did believe it, rather than trying to proselytize it on terms of its being a fact, you know?
Yes, and the most plausible inference from the facts seems to me survival and communication, but I cannot say I know it, because there are alternate hypotheses of explanation.
Mr. Scott, thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Out to Omaha, Nebraska, Mrs. Lorenz is hearing Night Call over KBON. Mrs. Lorenz?
Yes.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. This Bishop Pike ranks along with Dr. Clark and Dr. Poussant. It's marvelous. Bishop Pike,
yes.
In an article in Look magazine, Jim, as he communicated with you, and I believe this, I think it's exciting. I hope that you write more and that we can read it. But he mentioned that, or the attitude was that he wished that he had tried to work things out in more familiar surroundings.
Yes.
Have you sensed, can you expound on that a little as to why it is more difficult?
Well, I'll tell you this. Had something like that from him come through recently, I would be both puzzled and somewhat depressed about it in terms of his progress. But that's what came out the very first session, you see. This was about 3 weeks after his death. And sudden death, and you may recall in the litany, and some traditions, including our own, it goes back to the Middle Ages, there is a petition which says, from sudden death, good Lord, deliver us. Because sudden death, whether self-imposed or imposed by someone else, as in wartime, it would seem, from the data in this field, bewilders, jars the spirit. But in any case, within about 3 weeks, he did seem still somewhat bewildered and not as familiar with where he was. Where is not the right word, but in the terrain or the dimension he was in. The time and space are out of it after we leave this body, I guess. He didn't seem as sure of himself, knowing what was what, as he had been, or his memory of where he had been. Now, this seems natural to me. My house, I know where all the buttons are, how you turn the light on in the bathroom if you're getting up at night, or how you find your way to the door. You just can pull a drawer automatically, and there is your razor and so forth. We know our way around, and we know how to use telephones and various things. Now, by now, I would hope that, and it would seem from what has come through, that he feels quite comfortable and at home and useful and so forth. That's a matter, I think, of development, just as it is in this terrain of things.
Would you think that it's quite possible that a number of people are trying to be contacted and are simply not observant?
I'm quite sure of that. In cultures which have not been so much affected by the rationalistic factors as ours have, and there are many benefits from the Renaissance, the Enlightenment, and secular philosophies, but in other cultures, these things are just taken for granted, and there's a greater awareness, and many more people seem to be sensitive. I think probably all of us are sensitive, that is, mediums, in principle. Like, for example, I believe I could play a violin. I have never tried, but I think, you know, with some lessons, with some effort and some concentration, I'm sure that my basic intelligence would make it possible for me to be a pretty fair violinist. I think this is true of mediumship. Now that there's a great deal more interest in this whole psi field, all the factors which point to man transcending space and time, extrasensory perception, mystical experience, whether the dangerous route of psychedelic drugs or the slower but safer methods, or the newly contrived methods without drugs but rapidly by medical schools and departments of psychiatry, for example, the Langley Porter Clinic in San Francisco, University of California, Berkeley, experiments in non-chemical psychedelic states, various other ways in which we're finding out how man transcends the collective unconscious and so forth. All of this, with many more people interested in psychic phenomena too, may lead to a greater awareness and a greater noticing if others beyond are seeking to communicate with us.
So.
A lot of things could be happening we don't notice. I hate to confess it, but it's a good example. My desk is usually very messy. There could be poltergeist phenomena happening. Things moved, and I would hardly ever notice it, you see.
Well, thank you very much.
Right.
Thank you for calling. This is Night Call in New York, and tonight our guest is Bishop James A. Pike calling in from Santa Barbara, California, and our conversation is Their Life After Death. And we'll return to our guest, Bishop Pike, following station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Bishop James A. Pike after station identification. Next week on Night Call, a card-carrying member of the establishment on the generation gap, a black Methodist minister on what Christmas means to the black community this year, a black educator on how to teach our 10 million black and white functional illiterates, and a former inmate of San Quentin on how to improve our prison rehabilitation system. Monday, social critic Maria Manis, author of They, a novel of the generation gap. Tuesday, we observe Christmas Eve by taking the night off. Wednesday, Bishop Roy Nichols of the United Methodist Church on the Black Christmas Day. Thursday, Dr. Cleo Blackburn of the Board of Fundamental Education. And Friday, ex-con Rick Clutchy on rehabilitating the rehabilitation system. All this next week on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect from anywhere in North America to guest Bishop James A. Pike about Is There a Life After Death? Call Night Call, collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-4300. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
Our next Night Call listener is calling in from Tucson, Arizona, Mr. Isaac, who is hearing Night Call over KTUC. Mr. Isaacs?
Good evening.
Good evening, sir.
First of all, I'd like to ask Bishop Pike if he believes in the works of the devil on earth.
I have no data on that, sir. I have no reason to have an opinion.
Do you believe that there is that the devil is alive and that he does work miracles?
I really don't know. I've seen nothing by way of empirical or scientific data or fact to suggest that there is such a personality as Satan or the devil. I know his place in ancient mythology of several cultures, including some of the material in the Old New Testament and the Apocrypha, as well as the Pseudepigrapha. But I don't know anything personally about it.
Well, then this contacting, I guess it would be spirits, then you don't believe that you're contacting them through the works of the devil?
I've never had any reason to believe so. What has come through from my son and from others who have apparently been able to communicate at the same time, they seem to have been of goodwill. For example, in the earlier period when my son seemed in distress, it didn't seem demonic. It seemed quite understandable. It wasn't hostile. And later on, when it was much warmer, reassuring, and expressing a sense of being with what I was doing, enough to understand what I was doing, and making even suggestions, and commenting on what was going on, and adding other bases of information. I didn't see it as anything but positive, sir.
Well, the devil isn't always hateful or despiteful.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'd always thought if there were a devil, he was pretty negative.
I mean, well, what I mean is, to human nature, it isn't. I mean, you know, maybe what the devil makes you do, or what the devil would like you to do, is maybe pleasure to the human flesh.
Pleasure to the human flesh.
It's pleasure, maybe pleasure to your mind and pleasure to your body, but at the same time, it's not good for you, good for your spirit.
Yes, well, I felt that while I've not put a good deal of concentration in this field, I've been very busy with this world things, such as trying to stop dispatching people into the next world, into the other side too fast. I've been very much against the war in Vietnam. I've been very active in the peace movement and protecting conscientious objectors as best I can as a lawyer, for example. I've been very busy full-time at the Center for the Study of Democratic Institutions, and I haven't done much with this, but what I have done to it by responding to what seemed to be phenomena through mediums, seems to have been very strengthening to my spirit and has enabled me to help other persons, as has the book The Other Side from the Mail seemed to help other persons. So I've not known these negative effects, sir.
Mr. Isaacs, thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
This is Night Call in New York, and our guest tonight, Bishop James A. Pike, calling in from Santa Barbara, California, and this time out to Philadelphia. Miss Wirtz is hearing Night Call over WHAT. Miss Wirtz, good evening.
Good evening. I want to ask a question. You said something about that when you die, you either go to heaven or hell, or somewhat like this here. Well, first of all, could you define just what is heaven and what is hell?
Heaven, I think, is a good image because it suggests to us that we are fulfilled, that we are right with God, that is the ground of our being. We're right with those around us. There are no barriers or blocks or hang-ups. Hell is an image which suggests that we are divided, we are alienated from other people and from God, the one, the all. Now, one can be in this now, or one can be moving toward either one or the other, and I feel that this process goes on now and in the next world, or in life to come, if in eternal life. The point is this. If one were to be permanently in heaven, and if one were to be permanently in hell, just at death, then this would mean that one was an object, not a person. To be a person means one can change. And if we do survive, I believe it is as persons. And further, if there were a heaven of infinite bliss and a hell of infinite torment, those who would be good enough to qualify for this heaven of infinite bliss would not be in bliss, knowing that there were the disadvantaged, the deprived, the have-nots. And they would, at the least, stage a demonstration before the throne of the Most High. Or failing that, they'd organize a rescue party and go down there and try to do something about it, like we ought to be doing with the ghettos, with the segregated areas, the wretched housing conditions in our cities. And if that rescue party didn't help, then they would go to hell to be alongside of those sufferers, to identify with them and to exercise a ministry of presence with them. That's where Jesus would be, as we find from his ministry as described in the New Testament, identifying. And then God would be lonely in his heaven, and he might come on down and join the rest of us.
Well, I've been taught that, say, hell is nothing but man's common grace.
I missed that. Say it again.
I've been taught that hell is nothing but man's common grace. Now, and that's anything when you're cut off from any sort of life.
Right.
Now, okay, then, you say then there's a difference, say, if you're bad, in other words, then maybe it depends on how you live that would determine if you will go to hell or if you would go to heaven.
Well, yes, but it tells which direction you're headed, but you can always change in this life and in the next.
Well, who's to say, then, where you would go but God himself, right?
Well, or better still, I think one decides himself which way he's going, by what he does, and whether he's open or closed, whether he's loving or hating, whether he's
open to people or closed to them. These are the things that move us toward that which heaven is an image for, or move us toward that which hell is an image for, now or afterwards. And therefore, it means we ought to get with it now, because all of this can be worked on right now.
Right.
Jesus said, while you're in the light, walk in the light.
Right. Okay, then.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you for calling. Mr. Haber is hearing Night Call over WLIB-FM in New York. Mr. Haber? Mr. Haber?
Hello?
Mr. Haber?
Mr. Haber?
Mr. Haber's not on the line. All right, sir. We'll go out to Detroit, Michigan. Reverend Miles is hearing Night Call over WJLB. Reverend Miles?
Hello, Bishop.
How are you, sir?
Fine. You?
Fine.
Pretty, very good. Bishop, I just overheard a conversation you had with a young fellow there concerning Satan.
Yes.
I would like to relate to you that the whole Christian warfare is based upon the unrighteousness of Satan against the righteousness of Jesus Christ. If you recall, sin came in the world through and by Satan. And at this time, he's not yet overcome by the Lamb, as it is written in the book of Revelation, but it is yet remaining that all things shall be subdued under him. But I have read some time ago in the Catholic, one of the books was put out concerning what they think of Satan, and somehow or another, it was reported that he's been voted out. But I would like to say that the adversary of man is the devil, because by himself he knew no wrong and he did no wrong. But Satan, being the oppressor and the evildoer, even in the kingdom of heaven before he became known as Satan, was cast out because of his unrighteousness.
I don't think that which the imagery of Satan stands for can be voted out, namely the tendency of man toward self-centeredness and pride. In my particular religious tradition, we tend to take the narratives of the war in heaven on the book of Revelation,
mm-hmm.
and the story of St. Michael and the angels driving Satan out, and the serpent in the Garden of Eden. We take them mythologically. By mythologically, I don't mean they aren't pointing to the truth. They do point to the truth about man and the great issues which he tries to work out in his life personally and corporately.
Mm-hmm.
A good deal of the demonology in our tradition, as well as the angelology, comes from Zoroastrianism, that's the Parsi faith of Persia, into Israel during the Persian period, 5th century B.C. and on, a lot of it particularly into the Qumran Dead Sea Scrolls, and from that movement on into the New Testament, the Christian Judaism, Jesus-centered Judaism, being very much connected with the Qumran Dead Sea tradition.
Uh-huh. Well, look, tell
and
me
a lot of that is very valuable, but I myself do not generally receive it as literal.
How is it then that the Catholic Church arrived? In other words, if you take these things that I just said as possibly being not really truth,
as images.
As images. Well, would you agree that God himself is an image or was an image before he became?
No, I believe God is a reality.
Well, just a minute.
I'll put it this way. I don't think our definitions of God are the same thing as God. And God says, the commandment says, the first commandment, I am the Lord thy God, and I shall have no other gods beside me, not even your best definition of me, he might have said.
Right. In other words, he forbid even idols and images.
Which include even our best definitions.
Right.
But by image, I mean mythological word pictures which help portray the great issues of man's existence. That's what I mean by myth.
Well, then, how is it then? In other words, in this very sense, in other words, if you cannot receive it as it is written concerning the record, and I believe that...
Not all of it literally is the point. Right.
Allow me for a moment. Israel are the people, the Jews, rather, let's say, are the people that has the original record of God's events of times before the Gentile, which is us, had the access to the kingdom of God. In other words, they were the one that brought the parchment and the records of their events of Israel and the record of God's creation from Egypt and on up into Jerusalem, and as the record indicates. And according to their record, which we ourselves as Gentiles has no access to any other record that would be truthful a record.
Well,
other
we
than
do
by
have
Israel.
Now more and more access to many contemporary things.
About, allow me just a moment. You see, therefore, any other theory that would come contrary to the original, which is the Bible is written in Hebrew, as you do know, translated into Greek and in these other languages.
Right.
However, in the Hebrew tongue that Israel brought from through the wilderness is the only record of God's events of creation and things concerning the purpose of it. And we that are Gentiles, as I said, has no other means of knowledge gained through one's own theory or one's own seeking other than this record.
I would disagree. I agree with the positive side of what
you're saying. Well, where did the Gentiles get the
record
from?
We can know a great deal from the literature of the other cultures of that time, also from science itself as to the way of evolution and creation.
Well, science couldn't touch
Reverend Miles, Reverend Miles and Bishop Pike, I'm sorry, but we have to break for station identification. Reverend Miles, thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you. All right,
thank
me about this.
Thank you. This is NICOL in New York. We'll return following station identification.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Bishop James A. Pike after station identification. Tomorrow night on Night Call, the Republic of New Africa, a provocative, new, and deadly serious American black power effort. With Milton Henry, who styles himself first vice president of what he says should be a new country, carved out of the southeastern United States and turned over to black Americans. Under his plan, the Republic of New Africa would be made up of Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, and South Carolina. And more than that, the United States, after paying all the costs of resettling black Americans within its borders and reimbursing all the white Americans and industries for moving out, Mr. Henry would have the federal government pay the new nation $400 billion in reparations for 300 years of black American slavery. The Republic of New Africa, with its first vice president, Milton Henry, tomorrow night on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself collect from anywhere in North America to guest Bishop James A. Pike about Is There a Life After Death? Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-4300. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And we'll take our next call tonight from Washington, D.C. Mr. Nicholas is hearing Night Call over WAMU-FM. Mr. Nicholas?
Yes.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Good evening, Bishop. This is Starling Nicholas in Tacoma Park.
Right.
I would like to ask you, sir, to explain three different texts that I have here from the Bible. Of course, being a minister of the gospel, I'm sure that the Bible is the best place to go. The first comes from Ecclesiastes 9, 5 and 6. It says, "For the living know that they shall die, but the dead know not anything, neither have they any more a reward, for the memory of them is forgotten."
Right, yes. Ecclesiastes and also Ecclesiasticus, which is in our Anglican Bibles, as well as Roman Catholic ones, represents a period in Judaism when belief in life after death was not accepted. It did come later on in Jesus' time. The Pharisees, the Essenes, and the Covenanters believed in life after death, and so did Jesus. He was, in this respect, a Pharisee, contrary to the Sadducee teaching, which was contrary to belief in life after death, very much like the book of Ecclesiastes. I believe in survival myself, but the author of Ecclesiastes did not.
Well, of course I believe that Jesus Christ did believe in life after death.
Did he believe who?
When did this take place?
Life after death was a very recent doctrine in Judaism at Jesus' time. And I will say, in tribute to Jews before that time, they tried to follow the Torah, or the law of God, sincerely, even though they had no prospect of reward for it, nor no fear of punishment if they didn't. That was very ethical of them.
Now, do you believe that Jesus Christ believed that there was death immediately, life after death immediately upon death, or when he comes back?
Yes, in the parable of Dives and Lazarus, it would appear from that parable that Jesus was talking about persons who were still alive after their death, yes, before the end of the age or end of time or the eschatology, that is the divine intervention, yes. The parable of Dives and Lazarus.
Yes, I just found that text that I believe you're referring to, where it says, "These things said he, and after that he said unto them, Our friend Lazarus sleepeth, but I go that I may awake him out of sleep."
I meant Dives, the rich man who was in Abraham's bosom.
Oh, yes, you're talking about the parable.
Yes, and there was kind of a dialogue going on there between the rich man who seemed to be in a state of punishment and who was seeking some relief from it. You recall that parable of Jesus.
Oh,
that would seem to indicate that Jesus, as he told that parable, was thinking of conscious survival after death.
Was not this a story that the Jews at the time were very familiar with, and he was just drawing upon that?
That may be. Many of the parables are drawn on narratives that were used by Rabbi Hillel or Shammai or others at the time, and then Jesus made a special point of the story, or perhaps told the same point, yes.
Which he could draw a point from without necessarily believing in the story.
Well, yes, he may not have believed it, although, as I say, he did not seem to correct and say that there was no conscious survival after death.
Mr. Nicholas, thank you for calling, sir.
Well, I have some more.
Sir, we have a number of calls standing by, and I'm trying to be fair to all our listeners. Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Out of Noblesville, Indiana, Mr. March is hearing Night Call over WFBM in Indianapolis. Mr. March?
Yes?
Good evening, sir.
How do you do, sir?
I called up because a friend asked me to find out, is it true that after death we recognize each other?
That would seem to be the case, sir, from the data I've experienced and which is described at length in the book The Other Side, which I did with Diane Kennedy and recently has been published. Also from many, many examples of verified experiences which are in the various books in the bibliography at the end of my book. Now, it would seem that we have conscious personal survival. And that means the ability to recognize and relate to one another. As a matter of fact, even in the somewhat doleful first session that I had with what seemed to be Jim through Mrs. Ena Twigg, he did say then, there are many, many people here and people trying to help. And later on, he seemed to talk about helping others along the way. In his case, particularly persons who've taken their own lives. So it seems that there is a recognition of persons. He has referred to his father-in-law, and his father-in-law seems to have come through himself, through medium.
Now, would this reunion in the hereafter be the same as a reunion in this lifetime would be?
It would seem to be so. Hopefully, we would grow less and less exclusivist in our attitudes, less and less jealous of one another, less and less wanting to be the only person someone likes or loves. And you recall that Jesus, in answer to what happens if a person is married after becoming widowed several times, what about the situation in the life to come? Would it be a sticky social situation? And the answer seems to be that heaven, at least, the image of the completed personalities, open and loving, not be difficulty of exclusiveness.
Now, if I may, I'd like to ask you, when people communicate with, in this life, communicate with people in the hereafter, do they do it personally, or does there have to be a third party or a medium present?
Well, as I said a little earlier on the program, I think from the study of other cultures, and I'm not a great expert in this area, but I've read, many more people are able to be mediums than realize it. It's simply that the flat, rationalistic culture we're in squeezed a lot of that out of life, the ecstatic elements. Where a lot of them are getting restored through greater interest in mystical experience and psychic phenomena and so forth. But I myself, for example, I admit I'm very much concentrated on other tasks, one world at a time has been my motto. I've not been able to communicate directly, nor have I really tried. But being a professional man myself in a couple of professions, lawyer and theologian and clergyman, I tend to go to professionals, namely mediums in this case. And I suppose more people could develop the gifts than many are these days. Now, I myself would not feel that one with a lot to do here in terms of serving people, helping and bringing light and being concerned with making society better and bringing peace, hopefully, to the world and better life in our cities, should spend a great deal of time anyway in the field of psychic phenomena. On the other hand, I'm glad some specialists do, just like certain medical specialties wouldn't appeal to me, spend all my time on, but I'm glad somebody does.
Mr. March, thank you for calling, sir.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Out to Greensboro, North Carolina, Mr. Dillon is here in Night Call over WAAA in Winston-Salem. Mr. Dillon?
Mr. Pike?
How do you do, Mr. Dillon?
Very well. I would like to ask you, do you believe in the personality of Satan?
I have no reason to. I certainly would not express disbelief in the personality of Satan. I have no factual basis on which to affirm that either.
Then do you not believe in the inspiration of the Bible as being the Word of God?
I believe in the inspiration of all men's efforts to communicate spiritual meaning, which is based on personal experience, and the books collected by the Church. The rabbis after the fall of Jerusalem, meeting at Jamnia, as far as the Old Testament is concerned, that was about 78 A.D., I guess, and the Christian Church, the bishops, people in the same tradition I'm in, by and by, making different selections of books out of a much larger collection of books, many of whom we now have found in the finds at Nag Hammadi in Egypt in 1946-47 that have been not included, but are the same period. These fallible judgments of selecting books have given us material which is inspired, but not infallible, because when man writes, he's a man. And there are many inspired writings of other great world religions as well. So that is how I'd answer your question. I would not deny that there is inspired material in books of the Old and New Testament and in the Apocrypha, which is part of my Bible, the middle section.
May I ask you, do you accept the teaching of the Bible of Satan himself?
Do I accept the teaching in the Bible about Satan?
Yes, sir.
I have no experience in life or any factual data which would cause me to accept literally what
Bishop Pike
says about Satan. No.
Mr. Dillon, thank you for calling. Time has run out on us. Thank you. Bishop Pike, thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Night Call.
Well, I'm sorry to end so negative a note, but God is great, Satan or no.
Thank you, Bishop Pike. This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Tomorrow night, same time, same station, Milton Henry, who calls himself the first vice president of New Africa, a country he wants made up of Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, and South Carolina. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.